Greetings and welcome to the Gloucester Daily Times for Tuesday, April 7th, 2026, brought to you by the Talking Information Center, located in beautiful Marshfield, Massachusetts. This is your reader, George Krine. Today's lead story, SJC to Wade DeZoglio's audit lawsuit. It's written by Christian M. Wade, State House reporter, Boston. The state's highest court will hear arguments next month in a legal fight stemming from state auditor Diana DeZoglio's push to force legislative leaders to comply with a voter-approved audit. The Supreme Judicial Court has scheduled oral arguments for May 6 in Attorney General Andrea Campbell's motion to dismiss DeZoglio's lawsuit against House Speaker Ron Mariano and Senate President Karen Spilka that asked the court to order them to open up their books for the audit. DeZoglio, a Methuen Democrat and former state lawmaker, has clashed for more than a year with legislative leaders over implementation of Question 1, which authorized her office to conduct a performance and financial audit of the legislature to ensure that it is following government rules and regulations. The referendum was approved in the 2024 election by nearly 72% of voters, according to official results. Lawyers for Mariano and Spilka have continued to push back against the voter-approved law, repeating claims that the audit would violate separation of powers doctrine. They note that the House and Senate already conduct regular audits of their financial operations. In a motion to dismiss the case, Campbell said DeZoglio filed the lawsuit, quote, without authorization from the Attorney General and by an attorney not designated to act as a special assistant attorney general. Campbell said the AG's office is the gatekeeper, empowered to determine when, if ever, Commonwealth's intra-governmental legal disputes require judicial resolution. Last month, Justice Dalila Wendland rejected DeZoglio's request to appoint a special assistant attorney general to represent her office in her lawsuit to force legislative leaders to comply with the audit, with Campbell opting to represent legislative leaders in the court fight. DeZoglio has accused Campbell of creating a conflict of interest for herself by choosing to represent legislative leaders against her office in court. Backers of the audit have filed briefs to the SJC ahead of oral arguments, urging justices to reject Campbell's motion to dismiss the lawsuit. The Attorney General's motion to strike improperly elevates executive control over an independent constitutional officer, effectively nullifying both statutory authority and a decisive electoral mandate in which approximately 72% of Massachusetts voters approved legislative audits, State Representative Alan Sylvia, a Fall River Democrat, wrote in a legal filing. DeZoglio is urging others to file so-called friend of the court briefs to the SJC in support of her efforts ahead of next month's oral arguments, which she said could have a, quote, very strong impact on the court's decision. Last week, DeZoglio asked Democratic Governor Mara Healey, who's largely stayed out of the audit fight, to file a brief to the SJC in support of her legal challenge. The governor keeps saying she supports the legislative audit, but public comments with no action won't help increase the public trust in this issue, DeZoglio said in a statement Monday. This is her opportunity to get on the record in court, where it counts, support due process, civil rights, and the will of the people. The auditor's lawsuit is the latest legal challenge over the outcome of Question 1, which authorized her office to conduct an audit of the state legislature. Lawyers for Mariano and Spilka have continued to push against the voter-approved law, repeating claims that the audit would violate separation of powers doctrine. Several Republicans, including former state lawmakers and GOP Chairman Jim Lyons, have also filed lawsuits asking the courts to force legislative leaders to comply with the referendum. In another article from Christian Wade, Democrats ask court to strike ballot questions. Boston. Democratic leaders have asked the state's highest court to strike down proposed ballot questions that would eliminate stipends for lawmakers and make the legislature subject to the state's public records laws. In a new filing in Supreme Judicial Court, House Chief Legal Counsel James Kennedy said his review of the proposed ballot questions determined they don't conform with the Article 48 initiative petition law and would violate the Constitution if approved by voters this fall. A proposal by State Auditor Diana DiZoglio and Open Government Groups, which has cleared several hurdles to the November 3 ballot, would make the governor's office and legislature subject to the state's public records law. Another proposal inching toward the ballot would choke off legislative stipends paid to state lawmakers for commuting and other official expenses. But in the SJC filing, Kennedy argues that making the House and Senate subject to the records law would violate the state constitution because, quote, only the legislature can decide whether and how to maintain records and respond to requests from the public to access those records. He said the proposal, quote, fails to propose a law and instead prescribes internal rules for the House and Senate, which would be unconstitutional. While the lawmaking power granted to the people via Article 48 is as expansive as the general courts, it does not and cannot include the unicameral rulemaking powers explicitly granted to the House by the Massachusetts Constitution, he wrote. Kennedy goes on to argue that the proposal, if adopted by the voters, would also violate the separation of powers doctrine, which prohibits one branch of government from interfering with the functions of another. Laws may not vest the executive branch control over the legislative branch, but that is exactly what the proposal would do by subjecting the House and the Senate to the oversight and control of the supervisor of public records within the office of the Secretary of the Commonwealth and ultimately to the Attorney General. In a separate court filing, Kennedy argues that the proposal to eliminate legislative stipends is also unconstitutional because it fails to propose a law and instead prescribes internal rules for the House and Senate. He said, Article 10 and Article 7 of the state constitution protect the House and Senate from external efforts to control how they go about their respective business. The filing comes after the Senate Democratic leaders filed a similar request to the SJC to rule on the constitutionality of both ballot questions. Massachusetts is the only state in the country where the governor's office, the legislature, and the judiciary all claim that they are exempt from the public records law. This has led open government groups to consistently label its First Amendment protections the weakest in the nation. To be sure, lawmakers have filed bills in the past to open up all three branches of government to the records laws, but they failed to gain traction. Good government groups have regularly urged Governor Mar Healey and legislative leaders to provide more transparency on their inner workings. The state's public records law was overhauled in 2016 to improve citizen access to information and make it harder for state and local government to shield information. But the legislature decided to leave its own exemption intact, as well as those for the governor's office and courts. Exemptions to public records and open meeting laws mean the state's top elected officials can do much of their work behind closed doors. The ballot initiative comes as DiZoglio's efforts to audit the legislature, as we just heard, which was approved by 72% of the voters in the 2024 election, are tied up in a tangled court fight with Democratic legislative leaders who are refusing to open their books, claiming their review violates the separation of powers. The proposals are among nearly a dozen referendums inching toward the November 3 ballot. Under the state constitution, the legislature is required to consider the initiative petitions before backers of the referendums must conduct another round of signature gathering. Lawmakers have until May 5 to vote on the proposals. If they don't act, backers would need to submit 12,429 signatures from voters to make the ballot. House fire claims two dogs. No people injured, but home likely is a loss. It's written by Bobby Grady. A Magnolia House fire claimed the lives of two dogs but injured no people and caused significant damage to the building. The Gloucester Fire and Police Departments, as well as Gloucester and Beauport ambulances, responded to the fire at 146 Magnolia Avenue around 12:42 p.m. Monday after a passerby reported smoke coming from the house, Fire Chief Eric Smith said. That's a pretty good indication that there's a heavy buildup of smoke when it's pushing outside the house, and the house was closed up pretty tight, Smith said. At whatever point, windows start to fail due to the heat, and then the fire took off. The first crews arrived just under 2 minutes later and began attacking the fire from outside and knocked it down enough to get inside and continue mitigating the blaze. Douglas Shatford was driving by the house when he noticed the smoke coming from it and pulled over to try to extinguishing it with a garden hose as another passerby called 911. I jumped out and grabbed the hose and I ran to the back of the building because there was too much smoke in front. I opened the back door and started hosing down the inside and I was calling for the dogs, but I didn't hear anything. Shatford said he dropped the hose and ran to the street when he saw flames coming from the back of the house. Smith said crews reported the house was filled with smoke when they arrived and that the fire could be seen throughout most of the front of the building. Smith said the family was evacuated, but the blaze claimed the lives of two dogs. National Grid arrived to assist the shutting off power to the building. The Essex and Manchester-by-the-Sea fire departments provided station coverage. Officials said the fire was knocked down around 1:22 p.m. The fire broke several windows and left much of the building's exterior charred, especially the front of the house. Smith said it will ultimately be up to the family and insurance company to determine if the house is a total loss. Based on the damage, Smith said he considered the house a significant loss, if not a complete loss, but that is yet to be officially determined. As of 1:48 Monday, crews were still on scene, inspecting the scene and ensuring there was no risk of a fire restarting. I want to thank our on-duty personnel and mutual aid partners for their quick response, Smith said later in a prepared statement. Due to our crews, we kept this to a working fire and minimized damage from extending to the surrounding areas. The cause and circumstances leading up to the fire are still to be determined in a joint investigation between the State Department of Fire Services and the Gloucester Police and Fire Departments. Smith said the family will work with Red Cross to find temporary housing while working out next steps. And finally, from the front page, Earth Day celebration slated for April. It's written by Bobby Grady. Celebrate Earth Day in two ways this April as the city of Gloucester prepares for a flag raising and a recycling festival. Residents are encouraged to make their way to City Hall at 9 Dale Avenue at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, April 22nd for the first of the two events, which will include a flag raising. Mayor Paul Lundberg will read a proclamation, and the city's co-poet laureates Heidi Wakeman and Jay Featherstone will read poems. The event will conclude with a free showing of 1972's The Lorax, based on the Dr. Seuss book of the same name at Sawyer Free Library, 2 Dale Avenue at 12:30 p.m. The second event will be held at O'Malley Innovation Middle School on Saturday, April 25th. From 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. when Green Team Junk Removal will collect hard-to-recycle items while other groups talk about different sustainability-minded programs. Free art activities will be provided at Art Haven, and Brass Fed Nation will perform live music from 10 to 11 a.m. Community vendors will also participate through the days, and donations of canned goods, dried foods, and personal hygiene items will be accepted. Accepted items include electronics. This is for the recycling. Accepted items will include electronics, appliances, clean and reusable textiles, and other items such as mattresses, car batteries, and styrofoam, but there will be recycling fees. The most expensive fee will be $50 for mattresses, and the cheapest will be $4 per pound for fire extinguishers per pound, with all other fees in between. 80% of what Green Team Junk Removal accepts is recycled, reused, or donated. The city is still accepting applications from artists, musicians, and cultural organizations looking to participate. Would-be participants should reach out to Arts, Culture, and Events Coordinator Miranda Aisling at mhines@gloucestermass.gov. Interested parties should include their name, contact information, how they would like to participate, and cost. The city's budget ranges from $250 to $500 for live music or art installations. There is no fee for cultural organizations. And from an earlier edition, Gloucester and Essex win fire equipment grants. It's written by Andrea Holbrook and Stephen Hagen. The fire departments in Gloucester and Essex are among 307 across Massachusetts that will share $5 million in grants to purchase new safety equipment, the Healy-Driscoll administration said Tuesday. Massachusetts firefighters answer the call in every corner of our state, and our job is to make sure they have what they need to do it safely, said Governor Mara Healy. We're investing in the equipment that protects them on the front lines and strengthening departments in more than 300 communities so they can continue protecting all of us. Fire departments were invited to apply to the Firefighter Safety Equipment Grant Program, which provides reimbursement on purchases of nearly 100 different types of equipment. The Gloucester Fire Department received $10,893, while the Essex Department received $12,420. Essex will use its grant to purchase new up-to-date protective pants, jackets, boots, and helmets. Chief Christian Hassel has said as a call department, Essex firefighters may start with used gear, but as new members progress through training offered by the Massachusetts Firefighting Academy, the equipment becomes more up-to-date. The grant will allow us to purchase new personal protective gear, ensuring that our firefighters remain properly equipped for the demands of today's emergency response environment, Hassel said. It's a gear we wear when we're approaching a fire, he said. Equipment is sturdy, but it can become damaged. There are 48 staff members and 9 officers, including Hassel, on the Essex Force. Hassel said the grant money will enable the fire department to adapt and provide the level of services residents in Essex deserve. Gloucester Chief Eric Smith said the plan for his department's grant is to order some specific vehicle stabilization equipment, pairs of struts, that is, for both the city's ladder trucks. This replaces an old system that is beyond its serviceable life and also puts them on the reserve ladder truck, he said. The chief said Lieutenant Jack Letian and Captain Dave Barrett did solid work in determining what the department needed that would be eligible for purchase under the grant program. Dave mentored Jack on the process, as Dave has done the same and was successful as well, Smith said. They did all the work to get this application and put together. They submitted the grant, and we now have an award of almost $11,000 that will cover 4 of these items so we can equip both ladder trucks as noted. The Healy-Driscoll administration said the purchase of eligible equipment in many cases will help departments attain compliance with the Occupational Safety and Health Administration or National Fire Protection Association safety standards. The Firefighter Safety Equipment Grant Program funds the tools, gear, and equipment that our firefighters use to protect themselves, each other, and the residents of their communities, State Fire Marshal John M. Devine said. It's a smart investment in safety for the fire service and the Commonwealth. State braces for benefits fraud fight. It's written by Ella Adams of the State House News Service, Boston. With federal prosecutors pledging that anti-fraud investigations will lead to results soon, state health and human services officials are adding more staff to those who are already guarding against public benefit fraud in anticipation of an increase in federal audits. We just expect that the amount of audits and requests that we're going to get is probably going to double to triple over the next few months, Health and Human Services Secretary Kiame Mahania told lawmakers at a recent budget hearing in Clinton. Warren Republican Representative Todd Smola asked fraud-related questions during the Ways and Means Committee hearing, referring to a recently established task force to eliminate fraud led by Vice President J.D. Vance. Massachusetts is on the radar screen, Smola said. I'm a little bit discouraged to see some of the commentary from the governor relative to the level of cooperation that's going to happen here. The Trump administration is targeting Medicaid fraud, and the House Energy and Commerce Committee requested information related to Medicaid from 10 states, including Massachusetts, Colorado, California, Maine, Nebraska, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Vermont, and Washington, all, interestingly, Democrat states. Energy and Commerce Chair Brett Guthrie's office stated that each of these states displayed concerning cases of Medicaid fraud over the last several years. Healy has maintained that MassHealth, the Department of Transitional Assistance, and other agencies have strong program integrity operations. If we have nothing to hide relative to program integrity and how our programs get rolled out in this Commonwealth, then we should have no problem cooperating, Smola said. He asked Mahania for assurance that the state will cooperate with the federal government. We're very proud of the amount of activities that we do under program integrity in terms of both prepaying what we do, in terms of monitoring our prepay through algorithms and making sure there's nothing weird showing up, and how we credential and monitor our vendors and our providers, but also how we do audits and post-pay claim reviews, Mahania replied. I think it's unavoidable that we will be collaborating quite extensively with the federal government, Mahania continued. In terms of the way that the agencies and our secretariats work, we are pretty much hand in glove in terms of how we administer these programs. The federal rules and regulations form the backbone of what we are allowed to do and how we have and how we do it through the 1115 waiver, the 11515 waiver that MassHealth has. The state's five-year MassHealth waiver expires at the end of 2027. MassHealth plans to submit a request to extend its waiver in late 2026. Among other changes surrounding Medicaid that will be ushered in under provisions of the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, MassHealth will be required to check eligibility for certain members and require work, education, or volunteering for some. Mahania noted upstaffing within his secretariat to help with program integrity efforts after Smola asked if he needed anything from the legislature to help. Here's the Fishtown Local column from Gordon Baird. Today's headline, Rodeo is back in town. Hurrah! We've made it past April Fool's Day, through Easter, and soon into school vacation week. But in the meantime, we've reached a happy new measure of happiness on the Gloucester end of winter calendar. Bay scallop season is here. As we were marching fiercely and fervently in the Gloucester No Kings March, the boats were quietly slipping into town. The Gloucester Harbor Masters folks set records in how fast they rigged moorings in the center harbor area, all rented out to the incoming boats, all sizes and shapes, but each vessel with distinctive elevated cranes for setting and towing their scallop dredges. The rodeo is on, and they are off and running at a frantic pace. In April, there's practically a main invasion of Gloucester with an estimated 50 boats from as far away as northern Maine, plus many Gloucester and New Hampshire craft, crowding the available moorings and setting out daily for Stellwagen Bank and a chance to catch 200 pounds of scallops. That's 200 pounds a day. Some Mainers used to be lobstermen, but have sold their federal permits, traps, and gear. All they do now is scalloping year-round. They start in December in Maine and finish in April in Gloucester. Here they get underway at 4 a.m., heading for Stellwagen almost 3 hours out. They make a couple of dredge tows and can fill the drag up to the diamond at the 12 count fairly quickly. They are often home by 11 a.m. or noon. The owners of the main boats in Gloucester, along with those from Massachusetts and New Hampshire, all 80 to 100 vessels have Northern Gulf of Maine scallop permits, for which most paid around $100,000. The permits enable them to participate in a limited fishery in which they can each land 200 pounds of scallop meat daily until they reach the quota, total quota of 437,867 pounds. Most years they average 30 days, but last year they got 54 in an extended season. On a typical set, when dawn has finally broken out on the hunt, the fishermen open the valve on one of the hydraulic winches on the boom to lift the almost 10-foot-wide scallop dredge, a chain and steel ring bag with a mesh top hung from a steel triangle. They lift the dredge, wait for it to swing out past the open stern, and drop it into the drink. Then the crew lets out about 24 fathoms out on the winch before locking down the brake, towing at 3.5 knots in water between 17 to 18 fathoms deep. The crew leaves the drag down for a little over 5 minutes before hauling back. After winding the dredge up to the A-frame that suspends it over the deck, they check out the haul, perhaps trawling a little deeper each time as they set the dredge again and again. During the multiple sets, they move the catch to their shucking boxes and begin to cut them open. They work quickly, cutting off the top shell of each scallop, flipping out off the guts and cutting the medallion of meat into a small black pail that quickly fills with the glistening white meats. But the crew don't usually get very far into cutting because the skipper hauls up the drudge again. When the drag total finally comes up at around 28 bushels, that'll give them 200 pounds. They shuck away, filling their pails and pouring them into buckets that will hold 50 pounds each. When they have four filled and rounded up, they stop cutting and start to wash and bag the scallops, then settle them into a bed of ice. With the scallops stowed, they have to dump everything they have on deck before they get inside 3 miles. The captain lifts the drag over the stern and watches as the crew hooks the cable from the winch onto a shackle on the end of a large rubber mat with a large pile of scallops still on it. He then lifts the mat and watches the scallops slide back into the sea. They shovel the last scallops out of the corners on the deck and out of the shucking box and toss them overboard. Sometimes they're peeling off the outer working gear as early as 10 a.m., often not. Back in Gloucester, the vessel first unloads its scallops at Cape Ann Lobsterman, then tops off his fuel so there's plenty of available range to spare, often enough for two or three trips out and back. Back at the Cape Ann Marina, the dock is full of Maine fishermen. Everyone knows everyone. They like Gloucester. Both boat prices for scallops vary depending on quality and type. Right now, they are high. Day boat sea scallops run between $19 and $30 a pound. The rarer, more delicate bay scallops can run $34 to $50 a pound. The small size crews can net a $1,000 or more a day each for a decent catch. All seem to agree that the management system appears to keep this fishery healthy and lucrative. Gloucester resident Gordon Baird is an actor, musician, co-founder of Musicians Magazine, and producer of The Chicken Shack, a community access TV show. Thanks so much for listening. Please be sure to join us again tomorrow for another edition of the Gloucester Daily Times, and have a great rest of the day.